okay, differently. Okay, now Mark Cassie actually has a training program.
Sure. At Ocala.
Yeah, and he said, hey, if I really want to give you the best job, I would like to have the middle job too. Okay, because we're going to break these horses not for sale. We're going to break them for racing. And it's a different kind of program now. We used to have the horses, you know, ready to do 2 furlongs or 1 furlong in a sale, Steve. Now we're not. We're taking them step by step. And we've never had horses ready to run as early as May, June, July before, because Mark's got them and he'll tell us when they're ready to run.
Well, and at the Cassie Center, you've got a trainer in Mitch that does a fabulous job. And whether it's developing getting the horses started, or whether it's turnouts and then, you know, freshening and bringing them back forward, Mitch is as good a farmhand trainer as you could possibly want.
And when you add to it that the assistants that he has at each of the tracks have been with him for 20 or 30 years. I mean, now you got the ingredients to really have, you can't watch all the horses everywhere. I give credit to Todd and to Chad, okay, for being able to do what they do, kind of thing. But you really need some very good assistants who will give you right feedback.
Exactly, and honest feedback too, because when you're spending the kind of money that we're talking about, $600,000 on this Curlin colt, you mentioned the Bolt Doro, that was a $200,000 purchase, a Mucho Macho Man filly, right?
Yes.
For $100,000,
yeah.
And who was the fourth? I lost the
a Precisionist or something like that.
Oh, let me see. Interesting. How much?
Oh, come on. I'm not a numbers man.
Who was the 50,000. Okay, so it's below. It's actually it's below the page. I only printed the first 8 pages. So you guys, I'm sorry. I went down to 70. I didn't get that far.
So should we give it back?
What part of this, Len? Plenty of people struggle to make a reasonable decision and put away, you know, some of the pride that's involved, and recognize we paid so much for this horse, and whether the horse ended up lacking a certain element, or whether a horse gets nicked up and you know, isn't going to be able to fulfill their expectation, you have to know when to cut bait, essentially.
And I think also you have to, the very, very important part of it, if owners are listening, you can't make believe that somebody is bidding against you and it's your pride and they're not going to outbid me. You got to have a game plan, because you can't buy every one of them. There are more horses than there is money. So you really have to say, hey, I'm going into this with the idea that, and the horse before the Curlin, okay, we bid up to, I guess, 200 or 300, whatever the underbidders were. But that was the number. And if we couldn't get it for that, as good as it may turn out to be, and I wish him well.
Exactly.
You got to move on, kind of thing.
Now, no doubt. Let's talk about beyond getting these horses going, and we'll look for these 2-year-olds for next year. Let's talk about what's going on, because you've got, after what was admittedly, you and I talked about this, admittedly kind of a dry patch, it seems like the horses are running again and doing well, and not the least of which is already the stake winner, Wonder Wheel, who the minute I saw her name, I got the biggest kick out of it, because of course it had to be named after the Ferris wheel at Coney Island. And sure enough,
it was.
But but a number of horses are popping here. It seems like you're going good.
And I think, again, going back to when the dry spell was an experiment. The experiment was go over to Ireland. Okay, John went over, okay, and said, hey, because there are certain patterns, Peter Brand's pattern, Chad Brown's, I mean, they've had a lot of success, okay, and in talking to them, I said, you know, that's part of the jigsaw puzzle that we don't have a piece of. So they went over, okay, and John and picked out a number of horses. We brought them back here. We put them on the track, and suddenly they weren't running for us. Now that as we look into it, they're coming back, and they're running now, and they're winning up at Woodbine. And the idea was, you know, next time we do that, we're going to bring them back and let them just work on the turf, okay, the tapita instead of the dirt, because they're not, well, we've been in this business for 20 years. You think we would know that? But the answer is you learn something each time. And I think that's what makes it so exciting for me as an entrepreneur, okay, that you keep on seeing different patterns and different ways of doing things. And you interview so many people. Each of them has a different way of doing it, kind of thing. We were over at Terry Finley before. I mean, that's a wonderful way to get into the game, kind of thing. But many of the people that are in his partnerships then turn around and
go out on their own.
Go on their own.
Because, no doubt.
Because at least they've learned the ropes. They don't make rookie mistakes.
Well, and I'm gonna reference something that happened organically on this topic. And whenever you and I talk, and when John, you know, you can also hear John on the writer's room at TDN with my friend Joe Bianca. Got an email from an individual that has got some friends together, put six or seven friends together, and he asked me, you know, what I thought about, you know, the approach and how, you know, to get involved. And he was actually asking about corporate structure in terms of LLC or whatever kind of So I basically wrote back and I copied you and John, and I said your first call has got to be to the Green Group and to, you know, people that are professionally adept at and completely understand and experienced in, you know, this program and how to approach this. And actually, that's something that I think even before you put a team together in terms of a trainer and bloodstock advisor and whatever it might be, that portion of it, the underpinnings and the framework and understanding what your goals are in the game, that's the starting point, even before, you know, you get into, you know, wanting to, you know, to buy a yearling, a two-year-old, a claimer, whatever it might be. So it you know, there's parts of this that, you know, you and John are uniquely qualified to approach and to advise.
Thank you. You know, the tough part is it's such a tough business to start with, but from a tax point of view, most accountants never know the nuances of it. And, you know, it's nice to get in the game for the fun of it, but it's the whipped cream and cherry up on top, Steve, is to be able to take a tax deduction for it. And no other accountant owns 100 horses. Okay, so they don't get into the weeds. They don't know what's deductible and what's not deductible. So, yeah, and you certainly don't want a horse get hurt and it being in your name. Okay, and you certainly want the LLCs, and you certainly want to be active. And most people don't know what being active is, kind of thing. And I got a return the other day to look at, and he said, I've been examined 3 years in a row. Will you look at my return? And the accountant put down occupation, hobby. I knew exactly why he'd been. So, again, thank you. I think knowing the costs and being able to appreciate the cost, then you make certain decisions differently. But it's a great game. And,
exactly.
I mean, it's the excitement of it. The people.
Well, even more fun than a deduction is a win.
Wait a
and
second.
A win at Saratoga.
And guys like this, right?
It's funny how certain, you know, people's minds work. I got to ask you, because I know you've got a busy morning, but I do want to ask, of course, me and my shadow today, likely to go favored in the Schuylerville. This is another of the two-year-olds, and Queen Judith, actually, you got a chance for the DJ double. Because Queen Judith into me and my shadow in the eighth and the ninth today. You got Hot Penny in the Azalea down at Gulfstream on Saturday. And, boy, there's a maiden, Miranda Wrights.
Very good.
Named at Ellis on Saturday as well. So you're in full flight here.
You know, it is probably, looking back over the years, again, not giving too much credit to John, but on the other hand, giving credit to John, that the program is so much different. And I keep on saying to him, what claiming race are we in, John? And he says, Dad, we're not in claimers
anymore.
No
claiming races.
So, and again, think of it from a business point of view. If you hit on these big races, the difference is just the difference between profit and loss. It really, really is. So it's an exciting time. The most exciting time about the last race was Lois is in a wheelchair sometimes, and we had a cane, and we were down there. And the race went off, and the horse won. Okay, and I'm congratulating people, and I say to Carlene, where's Lois? She's already in a winner's circle.
She had made her move.
Yeah, she made her move.
I love it. Well,
again, keep your show going, because I think that the more people can hear tips and techniques, okay, the better off they are, kind of thing, because it's just a wonderful thing. And again, just have a good team.
Well, Len Green and the Green Group, DJ Stable, the nom de course, and today, chances, big chance, obviously. I picked me and my shadow in the Schuylerville. It's an interesting group, and Mark with three that are entered, and there's plenty more I could ask you about. Things are going very well.
I got to tell you this. Burns is great, because he calls and says, there's only three horses in the race today.
All of Mark's. I love it. Wow. Len, always a pleasure, and we'll see you off and on during the summer. You got the greatest escorts going. We'll see you back here. We'll see you in the paddock for the 8th and the 9th.
Pleasure, sir. Keep
always
on going.
Fabulous. Right. Len Green, everybody, and the Green Group, that, of course, is the industry's, you know, most widely recognized accounting and advisory team. And I can tell you personally, has been a huge help to us. I mean, as small as we are, with just a handful of horses, and had, you know, had LLC stuff to straighten out, and you know, put in the right columns, because I'm like blind without a cane. So Len Green, folks, and best luck today and going forward. We're going to get the Saratoga special. It's not Saratoga without the Saratoga special. Tom Law is going to sit in, and he's got two of his new interns that are ready to tackle Saratoga. Tom, grab the headset, and we'll have the guys. We can have the guys. You know what? I had four chairs, and they've somehow disappeared. So we're down to three chairs, and it'll have to do. So you don't mind. You're hoofing it around. Well, Tom Law, we're back here again.
Great to be here. I mean, come on, Saratoga opening day, 2022. Where else would you want to be today than here?
I think it's an easy answer, and
you're getting that a lot. I bet everybody's saying the same thing.
Everybody, you watch it on social media, and you know, the excitement that was building, and you know, people making their plans, and you know, this has been a funny week since its introduction. This sort of pre. It's sort of the opposite of a coda. It's like a kind of a wet run here the first 4 days, and you know, for those that remember the 24 days of Saratoga, four weeks, 6 days, and then we kept expanding a couple of times. We had the long run of 36 days. Mm-hmm. Then they added these four, and you know, the town won't really be in full swing. There's still people who only come for August.
August, yep.
It's amazing. Or they might come, you know, the last week in July. But so this is, you know, there's going to be a nice crowd here, and there should be a great opening weekend. But things really don't get rolling until, you know, the first full week.
Yeah, we don't feel the pace already, putting out the paper. these first few days. But, yeah, you can kind of sense the buzz kind of building as once this weekend gets in the books and kind of like, all right, we're settled in. You know, everybody's still moving horses in. Everybody's still moving in themselves, traveling up, you know, whether it's today or throughout the weekend. You know, still some empty stalls on the backstretch, but a noticeable difference even this morning from yesterday and even the day before that. So, but yeah, you're right. You know, there's a lot of buzz. It's funny. I see everybody on social media putting their pictures up of the twin bridges and everything.
How did that even start?
I don't even.
I
funny because I don't think
day.
About it. I never think
of course
about
we
that.
Don't think about
yeah,
it.
But I'm local, like you, so I don't know when it started. I mean, somebody got it started. The Clancys get on board with it too. So, you know,
it's very strange.
It's a phenomenon.
It is. Somebody should trace that back, like the meme, you know, the know your meme.
Yeah.
It trace it back to the origin, and this is possible. People, you know, there's the internet sleuths, and we can find out who is actually responsible. Blue is back. Who is actually responsible for the start of the twin bridges? Well, you got twin bridges here and interns. Let's introduce.
Sure.
Let's introduce the interns.
Yeah. So I have Spencer Ripchick here with me. He's a student at Penn State University. And I have Timothy Latteau, who's a student at Marquette University. They're both spending their first years on the team, two staff writers, both studying journalism and have an interest in racing. And I'll let them introduce themselves.
Outstanding.
Yeah. Spencer, take it away.
I'm actually from Saratoga, right down the street. So that's how I kind of got into horse racing. And my dad showed me Tom like last year, and he was like, maybe we should get in touch with this guy. He's a horse racing guy. So I got in touch with him, and he's just a horse racing guy. He's a pretty big horse racing guy. So I got in touch.
In every way.
Bigger than I should
be. I got
be.
In touch with him, and we were talking about internships, and he offered me it. And I was like, there's no better internship in horse racing than to be with Tom Law in the Saratoga Special. So I took it, and I went from there.
Well, don't forget John and Joe Clancy,
who?
Too.
Yeah. The what?
Yeah.
The Clancys? Clancy, that's a bar downtown, Clancy's.
Yeah. No affiliation. John and
says
Joe,
who?
Yeah. John and Joe have created this amazing program of internships, and you know, I've kind of just taken it and, you know, tried to assemble a team as well as I can every year, and it changes every year. Some years we have people coming back from prior years. This year it's kind of a unique year. Both these guys are first year doing it, so they're getting their feet wet. They've already been through the one day of the newspaper production process last night.
And I heard there were a couple of anxious moments.
A few, and I thought it went smoother than I realized. Joe actually texted me this morning and said, "Yeah, after you left, everything went haywire." And I was like, "Oh boy!" So that was probably after I was already snoozing after the Reds lost in the 10th inning to the Yankees after I went to bed.
Well,
yeah.
Joe, come back later, will you? All right. Joe Longo going by, and University of Arizona,
all right.
Racetrack Industry Program
nice.
Grad,
yeah.
And an accountant, actually, himself, after the Len Green visit.
Yeah.
You must be, you finished your freshman year?
Actually, I'm going into my junior year.
Junior year,
yeah,
all
but
right.
This is my first internship
gotcha.
I've ever done.
Gotcha,
yet.
All right, and let's get your partner in crime.
Yeah, I'm Timothy Latteau. I'll be a senior at Marquette in the fall. I got connected to Tom through Amplify Horse Racing Mentorship Program. Amplify Horse Racing is a organization that you know, hopes to get new industry members and help people, you know, improve and improve their careers. So I connected to Tom that way. So I've known Tom for about a year, and I've heard, you know, all of these great things about the Saratoga Special, and I'm from outside of Chicago in Illinois. I live really close to Arlington Park. That's
sure.
how I became a fan. And I was ecstatic to be able to get this opportunity to come here to Saratoga.
Outstanding. What was your origins around the game? I mean, obviously, you grow up in Saratoga. It's very easy to, you know, to get hooked. But
I would say my dad and my grandpa, you know, they took me to Arlington Park as a kid a lot. Many summer days spent there, and a lot of good memories. I think Arlington Million Day too. You wake up that day. For me, that was like waking up Christmas morning. That was outstanding. You know, every year seeing the top. You know, jockeys and trainers from around the world and equine superstars competing at their top. I was just enthralled by it all.
I love it. Well, we'll gauge how the family, how into the game and into equine sport, did you ever go to Maywood?
I did not, no.
Balmoral?
Not Balmoral.
Hawthorne?
Hawthorne, yes.
All right. So
Sportsman.
So you're about, well, yeah. Sportsman's, I think, Sportsman's pretty much predates him.
I think Sportsman's was their last year's 2002.
Yeah, so that
Hawthorne
I knew.
Hawthorne and Arlington, yeah.
All right, all right. Well, you missed Maywood and the standard bred side, Maywood and Balmoral. Maywood, particularly, a lot of fun and a great neighborhood. And that, most important question, favorite Italian beef joint?
Italian beef? I would go with Portillo's is a good Italian beef, I would say. Portillo's does.
That's like a neutral answer, and we're not letting you get away with Portillo's, which, you know, is ubiquitous. We need Johnny's in Melrose Park.
I've heard of it, but I cannot remember the last time I had it.
Unbelievable. Russell's Barbecue.
Yes. Yeah. Russell's.
All right.
Well, they're not. They're, you know.
They're kids.
They're a man of the world.
They're kids.
Yeah. You know, I joked with Sean and Joe the other day how we now have interns that are younger than the paper. So these guys are only 21, 20 years old. This is our 22nd season. So they kind of got mad at me for saying that, and I was like, "Well, I don't." They're like, "You're just as old as we are." So.
What part of the game, if you move forward on, you know, something involving, you know, turf writing and broadcasting and all the different elements, because there's, you know, there's just countless ways to get involved. What part of it is most engaging for you?
I think broadcasts, especially, they help me become a bigger fan. You know, NBC or Fox Sports. Watching and TVG as well too. I think, you know, watching broadcasts and watching a story that you're going to remember really impacted me. Seeing some, you know, small time horsemen or women, you know, winning on, you know, their biggest day. Sometimes they only got one shot. You know, if it's a triple crown,
sure.
That's their only shot, their only horse.
Yeah, like Eric Reed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Stories like that you'll remember, you know, for a long time.
But in terms of your aptitude and interest, you want a handicap, you wanted to turf right, the pedigree side. What elements of the game capture your interest the most?
I think, yeah, turf riding I would, but also, you know, broadcasting too. I'd love to be a reporter or an anchor and help, you know, create these stories that, you know, fans are going to remember. And also, you know, interviewing some of these people, you know, it could be their highest to highs or their lowest
to
lows, but either way, you know, fans are going to remember those moments.
I love it. What? How about let's go?
Well, Spencer should talk a little bit about what he's doing at school now, I think, is interesting for his career path.
Yeah, so at school right now, I'm part of their school newspaper at Penn State, and so I write for the football team, which is pretty big.
Nice.
And this
football team?
This fall, I'll be able to, like, travel with the team, go to all the away games and all that, and cover the team, tell the stories behind the team and all that. So that's, I kind of want to carry into that in my future, like, tell stories that nobody's going to know, like big stories like that. Or smaller stories, yeah.
Well, I can relate. Coming to Beaver Stadium as a sophomore at Colgate, and first game of the year, and it was the year that they had raised. You're probably too young for this. They lifted the whole stadium, and they built another set of stands underneath the existing stands, and I think the thing was up to like 110,000 capacity. And it was a frightening proposition. They come in there, and compared to Andy Kerr, where we pack them in at 2,200, and we tell you what, played all right, but ultimately got beat in the 50-10 range. But my one trip to
cool.
Penn State. Yeah, I was doing the statistics at that point on the broadcast, and I would do the halftime, you know, kind of some halftime report. Hockey was really my thing, but the being involved with that football program has got to be. Got to be a thrill.
Yeah, it's really cool, especially like a football program of that size. It gets covered by like ESPN, all the big ESPN, Fox, all the big name companies.
Well,
there's a lot of eyes on that sport.
Well, and you know, Marquette, nothing wrong with Marquette on that front, on the sports front. basketball and Frank.
Yeah, we have some great sports at Marquette. Yeah. I've always wanted to be on the, you know, we have a student media organization too. I've wanted to be on the sports team, but I'm on the news team. I always have been. And, you know, going into my senior year, I'll be the executive news producer for our newscast. So
very
it'll
cool.
be fun to get a lead that, yeah.
Well, you should send him, you know what, there's something he's obviously tied into. One story you guys I don't think have done.
Mm.
You send somebody in the truck.
Yeah, spend the day.
And spend the day with Mitch Levitis and with Eric Donovan.
Yeah.
And because their paths are fascinating. I mean, Mitch has always been involved in the production. But Eric started out, you know, Eric was the longtime morning line maker. And
worked in the press box.
We did everything,
Eric notes. Donovan. Yeah, right.
Yeah, and now he's become the director of the broadcasts. Mm-hmm. There you go, story idea.
I love story idea.
Right?
You know? I mean, we're never shy to never. People aren't shy to give us ideas, and we're never closed-minded to maybe using them, especially from somebody as highly esteemed as you, Steve. So I appreciate the
No. It just
the tip. No, it's
well
great.
Because he's uniquely he can uniquely speak to.
That's right.
You know, the production end. So it's fun.
He'll understand it more than maybe I would.
Exactly.
You know, I wouldn't know what the heck was going on.
Exactly.
I never see that end of it. You know.
No, and to me, what they've done, we talked about it yesterday, in fact, it came up, with Lafitte Pinkai, the third. LP was here, and Seth was a TV production guy, mm-hmm. Seth Merrow,
mm-hmm.
and he was basically, you know, saying to Lafitte, he's in awe. Everybody is amazed because what they're doing on that show, on the Fox show, is a Saturday telecast, basically a Saturday big day telecast, five days a week.
Yeah,
it's unprecedented. Now I understand, you know, TVG, you know, has got, you know, they're 24/7. HRTV was that way, but it's a little bit different where you're just picking up the track feeds, mm-hmm. and you know, and filling in the blanks, and basically just, you know, keeping the you know, the juggling balls in the air between races and common, you know, commentating and handicapping. It is interesting that neither of you seem to have a handicapping bend at all to you. Neither of you have really talked about that part of it.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely interests me, but I think, you know, that definitely helps get fans, but I think the stories too, and we got to really learn and understand someone, even if it's just a quick story, like in Fox's broadcast, if they do, you know, a 2-minute story on a horseman, you know, they might really get to know that person, and you know, just something that you learn every day.
Well, we and I've said for years on the show, whatever topic, it doesn't have to constitute raw handicapping and analysis of a race or recap even of a race to impart insight into the horse playing side of things. And when we talk with trainers, we talk about training patterns and development patterns, when the vet, you know, we get the vet conversations. Actually, I haven't had Dr. Alday in ages, but you know, we have for years, and there's insights in every, the pedigree side and the sales side. You know, the fairly recent revelations when it, let's say the last 10, 15 years about 2-year-olds and the opportunity to watch breeze shows, mm-hmm. and watch, you know, how, even if it's just, you know, the only quarter mile or the only eighth they're going to run under pressure, you at least, you know, it was an insight that wasn't you know, necessarily available to the public. There was a certain segment that knew to do it. Doug Salvatore was really the first to kind of publicly suggest to people to start, you know, you've got a video library of all these 2-year-olds.
Yeah.
And the general handicapping public was not aware of that.
Right.
And then it became, you know, it became a proliferation. And now, of course, what XBTV's done with the library of workouts. Which is, you know, we used to get only a certain number, Breeders' Cup lead up and Derby lead up in particular. And then the clocking reports, anybody that, you know, that followed, you know, Andy Harrington and National Turf and what they offered. But every other aspect of the game can be distilled into useful information and comprehension of how to play and how to bet the game, which is, you know, to I think to us, no matter what, everything we do on the show, at its heart is related really to the horseplay.
That's the
drivetrain.
It's the gasoline for the engine,
yeah,
right?
Very much.
What's the turnover going to be here today? You know, it's opening day. There's a lot of anticipation, you know, worldwide, you know, especially here in North America. I mean, they're going to probably see strong handle numbers. They had huge numbers last year.
You would think.
They'll follow right up with it again this year. You know, you got good turf races today. We got beautiful weather. We got good-sized fields.
The fields are terrific. Yeah. I mean, these first three cards, they'll draw the Sunday card. And, in fact, on that topic, I haven't even mentioned the draw for Saturday, if you haven't had a chance to look ahead, but the Diana, yep, of course, and the Sanford.
Sanford.
Did you see Dave Greinich? Dave Greinich had a very funny observation, which was one of the maiden specials that had been in the book, that had been in the condition book, didn't fill. And yet,
You got
12 two-year-olds for the Sanford, which is crazy. And, of course, today you got the Schuylerville with a group of nine, and it's just kind of funny.
Yeah.
We should have, you know, the Sunday card. We have, I think, the quick call, the turf sprint, mm-hmm, is the feature. But the Sanford drew 12.
12, and I thought one thing that was interesting about the Sanford and the Schuylerville, like you look at the Schuylerville today, none of the horses ran on the circuit. None of them came from New York, and only four of the 12 in the Sanford were from New York. So
Nick Tamaro made that observation. We'll talk to Nick later. We'll handicap. We'll get a little Thursday and Friday opinions from Nick later this morning. But, he had mentioned that. And of course, you know, with Cassie, Churchill and Woodbine, mm-hmm, runners that, you know, that three of the nine.
Yeah.
So,
and then a guy like Mark is gearing for here. He's going to funnel his best ones to here, you know. Puts a lot of work into figuring out his Saratoga string every year.
Well, and you had Keneally show up with, mm-hmm, that Just Cindy, who, mm-hmm, looks very, very good in here. I mean, 5-2. I don't know if she'll go favored. Butchie Reed shows up again with the Vequist sibling.
Yeah, I know. What
Dodaro.
A great mare. We had a story about her today. Joe talked to the Butch and Jenny Reed about her, and they lost that mare, the dam, this winter. It was too bad, but she did have a lot of fillies, so there's a lot in the pipeline for Swilkin Stable. Tom McGrath, I believe, he's done an amazing job as a small breeder with that horse, and to have her here again, it's pretty cool.
Joe Grant, everybody, one of the great owners. Is she working? Is she working again? Nice. So Lou's all alone. It won't replace. Yeah, absolutely. Joe Grant, everybody, longtime owner.
I mean, everybody stops by and says hello to you, right? I mean, that's what Saratoga opening day, the first week of the meet's all about, kind of reconnecting with old friends, you know. I've spent more time in the last 3 or 4 days just kind of meeting people. These guys have been with me, you know, popping into Javier Castellano and Jose Lascano, walked through the gate today, sitting there catching up. And, you know, I look down and I'm like, uh-oh, I haven't gotten a lot of work done today. I got to get to it. But a little bit of pressure's off. So we got issue number one in the books, and issue number two is until Saturday.
I was going to say, what is lay out the schedule. And we also got to get people to go visit the website for those that aren't going to be here till later in the summer. And
so this is horseracing.com. It's where you can find the paper every day. You can follow us on Twitter as well. Me is Saratoga TL on Twitter. I think it's by Sean Clancy.
Yes.
Sean and Joe Clancy, 67.
65.
Is Joe. We tweet it out, you know, when we're done every night. Also at Saratoga Special Twitter as well. It goes out there. We have an email. You can sign up for the email on our website to get a notification.
It'll deliver right to your box.
When it's ready, boom, comes right in. Otherwise, you can get it all over town. We're doing 20 issues again this year. This is the same schedule as last year and 2020. We didn't print the paper in 2020 due to the pandemic, but we went down to basically Wednesday and Saturday throughout the meet, with the exception of today, opening day, Thursday. And then Sales Week. We'll do a Hall of Fame issue on Friday. We'll do Whitney Day Saturday. Day after the Whitney Sunday, then the 3 days around the Select Saratoga Fasig Tipton Sale. Monday, Tuesday, the days of the sale, and then Wednesday, which will recap the sale and sort of set the stage for the week ahead. And then we'll take a little break. So we have 6 issues in a row right there in kind of the middle of the meet, and then back to the Wednesday-Saturday schedule throughout the rest of the season. So we're going to lose the members of our team around Alabama time. They got to go back to school.
That's the strangest thing. Yeah. You know, New York has always been after Labor Day.
Yeah.
And even, you know, even when I went to school, which, you know, I'm a class of 82,
yep.
We were always after Labor Day. And parts of the country, I mean,
earlier and earlier.
It's crazy. Yeah. Al Stahl, and Nicole, their kids, they're here like 10 days. And they got to get back to New Orleans for like August 4th or something.
Yeah.
School starts.
Super early.
Very
right?
crazy.
And they're done very early, right?
I guess so.
You think about graduations, like when we're down in Louisville for the Derby, University of Kentucky and the University of Louisville, I think, graduate like the next day after the Derby. And I think, you know, the colleges up here are much later. You know, I know the Northeast schools are at the end of May. But, earlier and earlier, they're killing my intern time. I mean, I'm going to be in a real jackpot at the end of the meet.
Oh, you're going to have to do some of your own work.
Well, we're fortunate that we have some. Yeah, exactly. We're fortunate that we have a little bit of help. Paul Halloran is a guy that's written for us for the last several years. He'll be back again this year. He's going to come up for, I think, 3 weekends during the meet, and he'll help out remotely from afar. Terry Hill, who was an intern for us several years ago, calls himself the world's oldest intern. I think he's going to be 77 this year. He's not going to be with us the whole season, but maybe just here and there, piecemeal. And we have some other folks that kind of help us out as well. So the cupboard won't be dry when these guys are done in August. But that's a long ways away. We haven't even run our first race yet. So we're excited.
Well, we've gone this far in a conversation with two of the Saratoga special interns and with Tom. What you haven't brought up the handicapping page.
I'm back. I'm ready. Last year, you know, I know you took some shots at me last year late in the meet. I patched it up with you. I didn't hold a grudge. You're saying I had the
flop sweat.
Sweating out the last couple of days of the meet.
Chapazian.
I led the whole meet until the last few days. Chapazian caught me. Then I rebroke and got the lead again.
Tied it up again with me at the end.
I lost on the last day. Chapazian got me. 138 winners to 136 last year. Lost by 2. He's back. You know, he's been quiet. He hasn't really been. I haven't even seen him yet.
Is he here?
He's here. He stopped in the office the other day to pick up his credential. Haven't seen him bopping around here yet today, but
no.
I'm sure he's around.
I thought you might.
Maybe he's listening. He's waiting to see what I say. But you know, I'm always hopeful to slay the giant. I put in my time. I did my work. I got my picks in. We got a lot of different picks here on the first day. If you check out the handicapping page. But we also got Charles Bedard back and Rob Whitlock and Jessica Paquette, who's doing work down at Colonial.
Yeah.
This meet and handicaps for us, too.
We had Jess on Monday.
She's sharp as they come, I think. You know, she's not really a rising star in the game anymore. We were glad to get her when I asked her last year to help out on the page. She does a great job. And I'm optimistic. I'm not going to say I'm going to win this year. Because Chapazian wins every year.
It's amazing. It is amazing. And you know, it's funny because when that all started, how long has he been on the roster with you guys?
Longer than I started at the special in 2013, and he was already on board. I think he'd been on board a couple years to that point.
How did they? I don't know if I asked them this. How did they discover him?
Well, John was a professor like at Clarkson, right? He was an economics
professor. I did not know that backstory.
If I have the story right, I know it's one of those universities up north. I don't think it was St. Lawrence. I want to say it's Clarkson. And I think he had reached out. He ran into Joe on the backstretch one day and said, you know, I'm a handicapper and I'm really good. You guys should have me. And one thing led to another. Next thing you know, he was on the handicapping page. You know, I know Sean used to do it a little bit.
Sean?
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Terry Finley's daughter did it for a while.
That had to be a disaster.
A lot of people have done it over the years, and Sean was just like, think he was happy to give up his space.
I'm sure.
We had another woman named Gail Fitzgerald who passed away a few years ago. She was great. Her and John used to have some good battles. Really good battles.
I remember that. I did.
And they were battling when I first started, too, and I kind of came in the mix. Then we had a three-way battle. But Gail, she would give John all she could handle. She actually beat John one year when I was doing the paper. Might have been 13 or 14.
How about that?
Yeah.
Well, the funniest part about Chapazian, he when I finally got to meet him, I mean, I certainly knew of him and so forth, and he had been a listener, apparently, for a long time, and when he introduced himself to me, it turns out he's from my hometown, from Manchester, Connecticut.
That's right.
And we, born and raised, and so it was very funny. So we got the city of Village Charm in common, and so we'll get Chapazian visits. I think last year we got into a pretty good Thursday or sometimes Friday because he's funny.
He's a character.
Well, he's
got a system.
If you and if you see him, like if I ask him on Friday who you like tomorrow, he's not ready to he literally is a day by you know, in terms of analysis and selections.
If I'm not mistaken, his method is basically he'll be at the track like today. He's probably here now, getting the scratches, kind of getting the feel, and then he'll be up here for the first few races. Then he'll go home and maybe watch the rest of the card partway through. I think he watched the double card
from there.
And then he goes to bed early. He might handicap a little bit. Then he goes to bed early, wakes up like in the wee hours of the night, and really dives into replays. Watches a ton of replays.
There you go.
And finalizes his picks. He'll often send me when I get started in the morning, 5, 6 a.m. His picks for the next day are already there. So that's kind of he's got his routine that he does. If I need to get a hold of him at 7, 8 at night, no shot. He's probably already in bed. Like he's got his own little routine, right?
So ritual.
You know where to find me. I'm going to be at the paper at 7, 8 at night if we got one the next day.
So. Well, and a lot of people, you know where to find them. Seth Merrill, he'll be at Desperate Annie's.
Yep. Handicapping there or checking the beer lines?
Maybe.
See how they work?
Maybe.
Little pool table, jukebox there?
Yeah, I
was a Desperate Annie's guy back when I worked at the Saratoga, and it was a must stop after we got done doing the paper at night, you know, back in the old days in the 90s when I was working there. It was fun. Go over to DA's, maybe go to Tin and Lint. Knock back a few. And when we felt classy, we'd go over to Nine Maple, maybe have a cocktail. Which is still a great place to go.
Well, Metro.
Metro back then. For dancing. Yeah, if we felt like a little confident that night, maybe go meet some young ladies out there. We might give that a shot. You know, all the young ladies really wanted to date, like, dorky 20-year-old sports writers back then, you know. So
they were the hot commodity. You're not old enough to have gone to the rafters.
No, I just barely missed it. I know I've heard a lot of stories, and I know people that are a little bit older than me that knew about it that went.
It was great.
Yeah.
These chairs are from the Riley, originally from the Riley Lake House.
Oh, nice.
Which was
right there.
I had a little card table that was basically a little cocktail table that went with these chairs, and the table is no more, but
We have two chairs in our office that are from Sean bought them at a yard sale or something one day that are from the original outdoor under the tent sales pavilion at Fasig Tipton.
Oh, that's
that
cool.
That are pretty cool. Yeah.
They're old
wooden chairs, and they got little holes in the back of them where they would probably pin the names of the people that were assigned seats to sit at. So they're in our office here, and we sit in them all the time.
Oh, that is cool.
They're pretty cool. Yeah.
I found that set in Greenwich, actually.
Nice.
And there was a little tag, and it said Riley Lake House. And I was like, all right, I'm game. This, of course, the casinos that you know, were out at the lake, and from a historic perspective, part of Saratoga's just unbelievable backstory. It's funny because we spent a lot of time this winter at Oaklawn, and Oaklawn's got the same got that same bootlegging casino-y
what a place
background. It's great.
That was my first time being there this year, Oaklawn. I'd never been there before.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah.
I
loved it.
I've come to really just
I can't wait
really enjoy
back.
The yeah I was there twice. I was there for that crazy December opening to see what that was going to be like, mm-hmm. and then came back for those 2 weeks where
it was
we had
summer when we were there.
We had the HBPA convention, and
That's right. Oh, issue number two of the summer edition of the Horseman's Journal. Finished it. It's in the mail. It's on the HBPA.org website right now. Pretty cool stuff in there. Just finished that. That's our second issue since we kind of have been hired to do the editorial production of that.
Nice.
Publication. It's been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed it. Meeting a whole different segment of the industry and, you know, casting the big wide net of the national kind of publication again, which goes back to my roots way back when at Thurber Times. So it's been fun.
I'll slip in a little news item, actually, with the mention of that, Tom, and that being yesterday's incident at Belterra. Did you come across this?
A jock was suspended for. The horse was taken down, right?
Which is not part of the rule. Just a unbelievable miscue, yeah. and a misinterpretation by the stewards of the whip six strike parameter, and. A horse by the name of Perkio, Richard Estvanko, trainer, and 11 whip strikes.
Mm-hmm.
They're not supposed to be disqualifying the horse.
Mm-hmm.
You can take away purse money.
Mm-hmm.
And find the jock, and the jock gets dazed, and there's the point system. There's nothing about taking the horse down.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there'll be all the usual, you know, apologies and we're learning. No.
And ultimately, who loses in this situation?
The horse player and
That's
the
right.
owner.
That's right.
The two most
important
put upon,
people
yeah.
in the game. The owners. And the horse trainer. And the horse player.
It's just unbelievable. Thanks to Nick Hines, too. Nick was the one of the ones, anyway. I saw that Nick had put it up.
Yeah.
And it was the fourth race at Belterra. And, I mean, okay, counting the crop strikes, I get it. And everybody's, you know, guys are going to have to adjust. But this is really inexcusable. And
I'm guessing it's a communication issue. I don't know.
It's an overzealous interpretation of the way the rules are instructed. And again, frankly, this gets into the shoving down the throat of the July 1st, July 2nd deadline.
Yep.
And the fact that Heise has you know, not really offered much in terms of direction and instruction, and you know, this is the way somebody decided to interpret.
Dovetail on your point. We have a very comprehensive article in that issue of the Horseman's Journal, written by Dr. Clara Fenger and a bunch of other folks, that outlines a lot of the issues related to Heise and what happened before and what will happen now. It was eye-opening to me. You know, spells it all out versus like trying to actually go through the rules and read it all. And the whip rule stuff is in there. You know, she wrote about that. Wrote about veterinarians' responsibilities, owners' responsibilities, trainers' responsibilities going forward. So to try to, you know, get some clarity through the mud, as it seems, for a lot of folks, you know. And this is the feedback I'm just getting as somebody walking around the backstretch talking to horsemen, how it's a little bit confusing and a little bit complicated, you know, which, you know, is to be expected. Change is a difficult thing in our industry, but to make it so heavy-handed and confusing, I think, is not doing a great service to the industry at all.
Exactly. Exactly right.
That's my editorial.
No, and it's well-framed. I mean, one of the things, in fact, again, Nick Hines, credit to Nick for making the effort to not only present it, but to explain a few parts of it, and he put up even the violation structure, and, you know, that featured, again, a a misinterpretation even of what the 11 strikes, you know, the jocks are allowed six. And they applied essentially the application of as if it was 10 strikes above the six limit, as if they had struck Martinez had struck the horse 17 times. And Sonny, how you doing? How you feeling? You all right? Sonny Taylor, everybody.
Legend.
Unbelievable.
What a legend.
A legend. Hot walked domino, I believe.
Wow.
My goodness. Just kidding. But not that far off, actually.
Yeah. Maybe.
Sonny, Sonny's got to be the longest tenured official in the industry.
Yeah, I would think.
And maybe almost in industry history.
Got to be. Sonny Taylor. Yes. Yeah.
You know, they're going to have to cut them in half to count the rings when the time comes.
Yeah. Unlike our crew here, they're just getting going, right? We seem like old guys to them, for sure.
Well, particularly you.
Well, definitely.
I you know.
More gray than I used to have.
I got this tan from the vacation, so I
you know. I know. That was quite a trip you were on.
Unbelievable.
Amazing.
Fabulous.
Very jealous. I had a good little, I call the time between the Belmont Stakes and the start of Saratoga my summer vacation. You know, I mean, this is not exactly a hard life that we have covering horse racing and being outside Saratoga, but, you know, that's the free time, kind of hit the mountains, hit the lakes, hit the rivers and streams and trail running and hiking and all kinds of good stuff. But once I get here, then I'm full speed ahead on the racing and was getting things ready, and here we are.
Well, a pair of terrific young interns that, you know, we say it all the time when I go out to University of Arizona to the racetrack industry program, the symposium, and the Amplify program, drawing people in and drawing interest. And it's really incumbent on, you know, those of us that are involved at whatever level, from horse player to owner to officials to media, you know, to really welcome and encourage the participation. So excited for you guys to be here. You're here every summer, so, you know, what you're seeing, but it's new to our Midwest invader. Did you ever stay around Milwaukee for a summer?
I've been to, like, Summerfest and stuff, I haven't stayed up in Milwaukee in the summer, but there's a lot of fun stuff to do there during the school year, too.
Wisconsin County Fair, State Fair?
State Fair, yeah, been to that, yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah?
Unbelievable.
Is that the best? What's the best state fair?
They say Iowa. They say the Iowa State Fair. But
nice.
That, I mean,
Spencer might go to Iowa. They play Iowa this year in Penn State?
No, they played Iowa last year. Okay. I think the farthest west I'll go this year is Indiana for Purdue.
For Purdue.
Okay, all right.
Lafayette.
All right. West Lafayette, yeah.
Purdue, they might lose their coach, Brian Brohm, right? No. Might be on his way to Louisville.
I don't my other than the Patriot League, my football interests are college football. With UCLA and USC moving, it's the most bizarre thing I've ever heard, them leaving the Pac-10.
It'll be too late. It's probably strange. Be too late for Spencer to get any USC trips.
Yeah, it's 2024, so that's when I graduate, so I won't be able to see any of those games, which kind of it's kind of stinks because it would be cool to go all the way out west for a game.
Well, I haven't seen a game in the Rose Bowl, but I go to the Rose Bowl flea market the first weekends every month out there. It's unbelievable.
I've been to the Rose Bowl. Never been in. I've jogged around it and been there in Pasadena. What a place. Yeah. I want to go. It's on my sports bucket list. I knocked off the Final Four off my sports bucket list this year, so that was fun.
Final Four is fabulous.
Forward to, yeah, what a great time. New Orleans, too, so we can't beat it.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, guys, I really appreciate it. Wish you both luck. You must be Twitter accounts. Let's see.
Yeah, mine is at Ripchick Spencer on Twitter. Yeah.
Hold it. Let me.
It's like his last name, right? R-I-P-C-H-I-K.
Spencer. Ripchick. Spencer Ripchick. Ripchick Spencer. There it is.
And
And you follow me. Look at you. Oh. Thank you. I appreciate that, and I'm gonna respond. There we go. Get you up. All right. And
yeah, I'm at Littau Timothy. It's LITTAU.
Littau. Interesting. Littau Timothy. So that's pretty funny that you.
They do last name and then first name.
It's
Registering for their classes or something, right? Right. That's how it goes.
I'm following you, which means that must have come from Amplify, from Anise.
I think so, yeah.
How funny. Excellent. Well, guys, enjoy. If we can help you in any way, don't hesitate. All right? Give you more story ideas.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Steve, yeah.
Not at all. Not at all. Very cool.
Thanks for having us on.
Joe, are we going to see Joe later?
I told him.
All right.
He's probably on his way here now.
All right. Let me see. Nick Tamaro just reached out, so let's see what Nick's plan is, if he's going to join us now or in hour three. All right, good. All right, we're going to get Nick Tamaro in here. Let's take the break. We'll come right back. We lost the first 15 of the morning, but we're rolling now. It's opening day at Saratoga. It's actually more sedate here today than it was yesterday, which is bizarre. I can't really explain that, but it has a little bit more of a relaxed feel. Yesterday, people had blood in their eye. I mean, it was like everybody was like chomping at the bit. Back with Nick Tamaro and Joe Clancy later. Stay with us. Opening day at Saratoga. Waiting for the changes. Andy Serling has not sent them, so that means there aren't any. If Andy doesn't send out the changes, there are no changes. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is national.